pick a window.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I am your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends, in the North, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman Laird Jeff Bell.
This week can bite my sack.
Amen.
Okay, what happened?
It's bad sack biting week is what it is.
Aww.
Let me tell you something. Nobody likes getting their sack bit. Or if you do, that's fine. I'm not kink shaming.
I was going to say, are you sure? Nobody?
Nobody.
But go on.
Nobody wearing these headphones.
That's right.
Fair. But what happened? Why can this week bite your sack? What's up?
I lost job number two.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The pot magazine?
Yeah.
It's, what happened?
It is shifting to new ownership, and they're bringing in their own team.
Hate that shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that is quite a devastating blow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
So my luxurious goatee, as you see it, is going to be much shorter come next week.
Yep.
Look at that glorious thing. Look at it. Look at this drape.
Look at it.
Pretty glorious. Yes. I'm so sorry, friend.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
It's going away. It's all going away. It all sucks. Anyway, how was your week?
Well, I mean, I didn't lose job number two. So I think that I'm somehow a step ahead of you, my friend.
Thanks, pal.
I didn't get out to see you, though. I was very sad. Did my mom come by yesterday?
If she did, it was after I left.
Ah, fair. Okay.
I had some minor family emergencies to take care of yesterday.
Yeah.
And so I was only there for, you know, about 4 hours or so. And then I had other places to go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think she stopped by and saw Braxton.
Well, that's nice. Braxton deserves company.
That's right.
He does. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Prince of a man, that Braxton.
Yep. But yeah, I was, I spent the day yesterday trying to get the basement put back together again. Like, because we're still dealing with the aftermath of the flood. So we're dealing with all of it. So that was how I spent my day yesterday. But I then got to go to one of the most interesting wedding receptions I've ever attended in my entire life. It was at a corn maze.
All right.
Huh.
So there you go. We got to just go, like, we watched a little ring ceremony and we chatted with family for a minute. And then we just got to go play in the corn maze.
I was just thinking that's a long fucking bridal march if she had to go through the corn maze.
Oh, through the corn maze?
You gotta hear Here Comes the Bride while she works her way through the obstacles. That would be awesome.
You just keep hearing little cries of, damn it. Damn it.
No, it was cute though. And this family, so this is actually Kaya's side of the family. It's Kaya's uncle. It's actually Kaya's cousins. So in the last 3 months, Kaya had three cousins and all three of them have gotten married in the last 3 months. So this was the third of the three kids. And as she walked up, like her father was walking her up to her husband for the ring ceremony and they got about halfway up and she gave him a hug and then, like, ran the rest of the way up because they were already married. They'd gotten married in the morning. This was just a ring ceremony. So it was just cute. It was just cute. Cute family event. So that was kind of the highlight of my week. How about you, JC? What happened in your life?
You know, when you're coming close to a government shutdown.
Yeah.
And the agency says you guys need to cut your burn rate. Because we're running out of money too fast and we're not going to have, we don't know if we're going to have money. So they say, well, we're going to prioritize, all the tickets that come in. So you guys only have to, you know, you're not going to have to worry about cleaning out the box. You're just going to have to get through as many tickets as we can get prioritized. You probably shouldn't prioritize tickets that you know are going to take one developer 3 full days to work on. And that was me. I got 3 full days, 1 fucking ticket, and I was miserable because it was all just, here's this whole new thing. It changes this entire page, which is like, it was what, 3,000 lines of code? Ooh. It's 3,000 lines of code that all has to change. Have fun! Yeah, that was fun. I don't like that kind of tedious shit. If I have to do tedious work, I'd like it to be done like that. You know, I'd like to be able to, this link is broken. Go ahead and fix the link. Here it is. You know, send it out, get a QC, come back, publish it and say, okay, we're done. That's fine. I don't mind that. I could even spend a day doing nothing but the tedious shit because at least I see there's progress being made. This was like every day. Fuck. What am I on now? Part C. Okay. Change all this. And oh man, it was fun. So not fun at all. And then on top of it, Salesforce. I don't know if either of you are familiar with the product known as Salesforce.
I've worked with Salesforce before.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing where you basically get leads, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, the government's decided they want to use Salesforce.
Of course.
They don't really know what they want to use it for, but they want to use it. And so in order for things to pass in anything they change in Salesforce, it must be reviewed for disability compliance, which is known as Section 508. Guess who's the Section 508 expert for our team?
The angry old guy.
Yeah, the angry old guy. So, and I have all these awesome tools that I can use to quickly go through and do a 508 evaluation of any website, except that none of them fucking work on Salesforce because of the way it's so convolutedly developed. So it means I have to open up code and interrogate it and see if it's at least coded to standards, which means it would fall in compliance. Otherwise, it doesn't fall in compliance. Like, you all. I had 2 of those last week, too. So
I have to say, I recognize that when you say you had to interrogate it, I know what you mean by that.
Yeah.
But I just pictured you with, like, a computer and a desk lamp.
Yeah,
like
putting really my desk lamp over the...
Like yelling at the computer, like, what are you doing?
Where were you on the night of the 22nd of September?
Exactly.
Like... You know, that would be so much more entertaining than what I actually have to do. Oh, it's just, heaven. You know, and then the fact that Congress is fucking around and I am convinced next week I'll be furloughed, you know, for a time. While they continue to fuck around. And it's like 5 people holding it up.
Yep.
And 5 people could be responsible for me. And if I get furloughed, it's furlough without pay. Ugh. And thanks to my company not paying bereavement leave, I'm in the negative numbers still for vacation hours. So I can't even pay at least a few days toward it. I'm stuck. And I'm like, oof. Motherfucker. So, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm like, this is awesome. This is just, and then on the top of having to do all the tedious work, I'm like, this is just fucking awesome. I just want to write for a living and I don't get to do that. And I just hate that. So, yeah, work is fun, isn't it? Mm. Jeff can attest to how much fun it all is.
I wouldn't know anymore.
That's right. They took it away. In the meantime, getting ready for, I missed FanX somewhat intentionally. There were a couple of opportunities I could have had to be there if I'd been willing to put a couple hours at the Star Trek table or something, you know, Star Trek fan club table. I could have done it. But I was like, I don't want to spend my day there, arsing myself when I, you know, I'm not really promoting anything. So I didn't do it. And I missed out. Oh, well, I really don't have FOMO over it. I really don't.
I do have nostalgia because my Facebook memories this last week or so have been full of FanX memories. So I have nostalgia. I miss it from back in the day, but I don't care to go now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Winona went for 3 days and wandered around in cosplay. Because that's, you know, if anything, it's cosplay con. I mean, people love that. So,
yeah.
And she went around cosplaying the whole weekend and, you know, got interviewed. Got her photo taken a lot because it's all, they do anime cosplay.
Nice.
And they're huge fans of JoJo.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they go around cosplaying for that and love it. And then, yeah, they go talk to the voiceover actors who never have a line, you know, except the ones that do other animation. Then they have the lines because, you know, those are the ones the parents are dragging or putting their kids in.
Right.
But like just if they have only done anime, they never have a line. So they get to sit and talk to them. And they'll actually talk to them for a good while, which I always liked. But she had a great time. And I'm like, good. And I know our buddy Bob Easton had a panel, which he wound up moderating because the moderator didn't show up.
Oh, dear.
And I'm like, I don't know who you fuckers are that won't let me and Jeff back in, but guess who showed up to every fucking panel they were assigned to?
Right?
Jeff and me. We made sure. In fact, there was 1 year I had signed up to get an autograph from Stan Lee, which cost me like $80 to do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck it, it's Stan Lee.
Right.
It's the only thing I'm ever going to pay for at this con. The extra money I'm going to pay for at this con. So I was doing the Stan Lee, but I had a panel show up and it was like right around my appointment time for Stan Lee. And I finally got something worked out where I could get in the VIP line because I was a special guest. I didn't realize I could do that. I got in the VIP line. And I was able to get through to Stan and get back to my panel, but I was actually having anxiety about missing my panel.
Oh, wow.
And my friend Rebecca Frost was saying, you should just blow off the panel. Just blow it off. Who cares? And I'm like, I fucking care. I agreed to do this panel. I'm fucking showing up for it. Yeah. So there were apparently still a lot of that going on. And I'm like, I don't understand people who, when they give their word to do something, they can't do it. Yeah. I get illness and injury and family shit happens and you can't make it at all. But you know, usually you do that, but there are just people who are just basically flaky about making it to panels. And that's what I got irritated by.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then we get kicked out and it's like,
uninvited.
Uninvited basically. Yeah. We got uninvited. And so that was it. It was like, well, I guess we don't, I mean, even though we show up every time I felt like we were great contributors to panels, you know, got the audience going, had a lot of fun. It was still wasn't for us.
Okay. So my FOMO is not seeing people that I love and only get to see at this event.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Ever since, what was it? Richard Paul Evans molested that writer lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Dan O'Brien tried to cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
And were assholes and everybody was an asshole and it was just a bunch of toxic masculinity and bullshit.
Yep.
You know, she should take it as a compliment that I, you know, grabbed her without permission. Fuck you, Evans, piece of shit.
You're going to sell more books because I just put my arm around you and have been flirting with you all weekend. It's
do I miss it? Yeah. But, you know, it's going to panels where a lot of the time you know more than, you know, some of the panelists. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's great because, it's all a matter of folks sharing a common interest. So, I mean, that's mm-hmm. That's not a big hit, but, you know, I had the same thing with my panels, and that is I made a commitment. This is important. I promised to be there. I advertised that I'd be there. So, by mm-hmm. God, I'll be there, and fuck you. I'll be there 10 minutes early if I can.
Yeah.
And we did, man. It was low swear. What did we get in trouble for the one time? It was, you mention your podcast too much, and it's like, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, we say, hi, I'm from the podcast at the beginning, and we say, don't forget to listen to the podcast at the end. Whereas our bitch is that writers would come in the room and put up a pyramid of books, you know, and I even had one writer stop a panel so that she could commit commerce for 8 minutes with somebody. It's like, it's a book. Take the 20, hand off the book, say thanks, let's get moving here.
Right.
We got 45 minutes to, to entertain these folks, and nobody's entertained by watching you guys. And it was shit like that. Like, don't mention your podcast so much. Well, what about that? Oh, well, that's, we just, you know, that's whatever.
Yeah.
And
well, that's just how they have to do. We have to allow them to do that, or we won't get them as panelists. It's like, well, then that's how you get us as panelists, is we have a podcast. We're going to talk about it. Yeah. Irritating. Annoying. Though I always loved the, there was the year that the fire marshal pulled the fire alarm because it was too overcrowded.
Oh, yeah. That was like one of the first years, wasn't it?
And Jeff was doing a Batman panel, and he stood up and he said, "Nobody leaves until men in white hats come in to escort us out."
Yep, no fire hats, no leaving. All they're trying to do is clear the audience. And you know what? You guys are sitting down. They'll come and get us if there's a real fire.
Yep.
And everybody sat back down. There was no way. It was the biggest room outside of the hall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was packed. It was the Batman 75th anniversary panel. No, I'm not leaving if there's a real fire, you fuck.
I will walk you out, and we'll all do it out in the parking lot if I have to, but we're doing this panel, motherfucker.
For sure.
Yeah, but I got to admit, when Shannon Hale got sexually harassed in the way that it was bungled and mishandled, and they victim blamed and all of that.
Yeah, all that shit.
That was the end of my need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And now my want to go is handled only by, I can't afford to buy anything on the vendor floor, so I'd only go to panels. And I'd go to the panels that my friends are on, and I'd see my friends. And that would be kind of sad and bittersweet, because I miss interacting with them in such a way. So
anyway, it
showed up. It was super successful as always. Money was made. Money was spent. People were dressed up. There were you know, good things and bad things. And all I know is that Utah proved that they're both racist and anti-Semitic, again, with their standing ovation of Gina Carano.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, okay.
She has a safe space at the Utah FanX, yes. That's how Sarah put it. She has a safe space at Utah FanX.
Isn't that Sarah posted?
Yeah.
we should have asked Sarah and Doug to come on and give us a recap of FanX. They attended.
They attend every year.
We can do that next week.
Yeah. We can do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to write them right now.
All right. What a great idea.
But anyway, I'm gearing up for Wasatch Comic Con. I've already ordered some blank covers. Ooh. For Shaolin Nun number one, and I will even try my hand at doodling a few colors covers, so that you know, you can buy a blank cover, and if you don't want me to draw on it, I can understand why. You can walk it over to Chris and Andy and pay them to draw on it. You know, you could. I'm hopefully going to get some from Greg that'll be fully illustrated. Hopefully, he can get those done for me before the deadline, before I need to be there. But it'll be fun.
When is Wasatch Comic Con again?
November.
Sweet.
I was going to look up the exact date.
That gives me plenty of time to make my plans, man.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
So let's see.
I'm sending a group message to Doug and Sarah right now. So give me just a sec.
Let's see. Yes. On the guest list, more are being added every Friday, but we have our very own J.C. Carter.
That's right.
Utah's own Chad Harden.
I thought we canceled Carter.
What?
Nothing.
Travis Romney, Ryan Katie, Chris Hoffman, Andrew Malin, Philip Seve. It's going to be really, really good.
Don't read them all. I'm adding like 15 more this week.
I know. I was only reading the ones that I had access to.
And let's not forget our favorite writer, Doug Wagner, will be there.
Yes.
Doug Wagner.
Friday and Saturday, November 10th and 11th.
Yep.
Nice. I'm excited.
Yep. November 10th and 11th. Yeah. And is it still a free con, Jeff?
Yeah. Always will be.
It's still a free con. Just show up. It's at a mall. So, you know, if you get bored, you can go shopping.
Oh, you get to check out the new nerd store. It's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I finally went last week I had some stuff I needed, and I just dropped in to pick it up. I haven't been there since they moved in, and it just blew my fucking mind. I can't wait. I mean, there's still stuff they're finishing. They're still working on the game space. They're still working on the actual cafe. And, you know, one fucking problem after another over the last 2 years. You know, it was a very detailed, it was a very headachey, it was a very expensive move to get over there across the hall. But holy shit, it's the biggest nerd comic book shop in Utah now. They're bringing in more and more and more and more stuff as they go, and they're filling up that space because the space is almost four times bigger than the old store.
And
the gaming space alone takes up about as much square footage as the old store.
Wow.
So it is, I mean, it's it's something special over there. You guys are going to have a great time at Wasatch Comic Con this year.
You can sit down and game. You can, oh my God, everything's there.
November 10 and 11, by the way, which was.
Yeah, November 10th and 11th, yeah. Jocelyn said that too, so.
I did.
Here we are. Alan, there's going to be some secret stuff at the... at the nerd store coming up. I'm not going to announce it yet, but there's some secret stuff coming. Some special stuff that's secret right now, but it's coming.
Ooh.
And I'm pretty excited about that. So, because that space is fucking huge.
Awesome.
It used to be a clothing store. So there's a lot in the back. There's a lot of backspace that they can use. And they've got some plans. And I'm kind of excited about those plans. So we'll talk about those as they get closer to fruition, because I'm not going to commit them to something that may take a while to happen.
I am. Right? So at some point, they're going to put a podcast studio in there.
Shut up.
No, I will not. And you can't make me.
There's a possibility we could do this all in the same room occasionally once in a while?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, if we pay for it.
I love it. Oh, hey, you know what that means? That means we need people to join our Patreon.
That's right.
You mean people can navigate over to patreon.com/defenmedia, D-E-F-E-N media, and join us so that we can do live remotes and stuff again?
Yes.
And help pay some bills now that I am down a job?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Let's make that happen.
If only people had the information of patreon.com/defenmedia. Oh, how do I tell them?
I think you just did.
I hope so.
And on those commercial notes, let's dive into some news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Okay, this first bit of news is for a certain segment of our audience. That is literally my age or older.
Yeah, basically.
Roger Whittaker has passed away.
Mm.
Roger Whittaker was a smooth-voiced 60s and 70s singer. Had a song about sailing the seven seas in an old clipper ship called The Last Farewell. That shot up the British charts in 1975. This motherfucker whistled a lot.
A lot. He was actually famous for his whistling. So famous, I thought he wasn't. I didn't realize he was a British performer. I thought he was a country music performer because those were the fuckers whistling all the time. Were the country music performers, right? In the 70s. So I thought, oh, he's must be a country music performer.
But he's dead. 87.
That was a good long life.
I remember him best from the KTEL at commercials.
Oh, there you go.
Because they put out a greatest hits of his, which was him doing his two famous songs, two or three of his famous songs, and then a whole lot of covers. And then they took his covers and put them on other KTEL albums. So over the years, you'd hear him singing something, and it's like, and you know, this by Roger Whittaker. And it's like, again, thinking he's a country music star. I don't know why. It was just, that was how it was.
Joe Matt, acclaimed cartoonist behind Peep Show, has passed away, 60 years old.
Too young.
According to Naomi, the Patreon account, Matt passed away Monday following a heart attack at his art table.
Ouch. Mm.
Died in a saddle.
Yep.
He'd apparently been experiencing some health problems for a while, but could not afford to go to the doctor.
Fuck. Fuck.
Yep.
Don't know how that is.
Yeah, no shit. Matt's death first came to light after a Facebook post from his longtime friend and collaborator, Matt Wagner. The pair collaborated on Mage, where Matt was the colorist. He'd go on to fulfill that role in a number of Grendel stories.
Yep.
Including the first Grendel Batman crossover. Several time Eisner Award nominee, won a bunch of other awards. But yeah, it's shockingly frank about his own shortcoming, but his fixation on sex and pornography drew accusations of misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
Those critiques were certainly felt by Matt, who regularly acknowledged his comics and their impact within the comics themselves. Friends and fellow indie artists like Seth Chester Brown were regular fixtures in the Peep Show. And he says, he said, "I'm a voyeur and I'm trying to make a book I would enjoy reading. I would imagine other voyeurs are interested if it's done well. I think autobiographical comics have been given a bad name simply because of the fact that I've focused on a lot of porn and masturbation. I feel like that's colored the whole genre for some people. Not every autobiographical cartoonist is doing that." Yeah, I know.
No.
I'm following Crumb's lead, where he explores his obsessions, at least with women. Because I got to admit, we talk about masturbation and pornography quite often, and I don't, I don't think we're being misogynistic, are we?
I'll call you out. I'll call you out.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, yeah, of course, of course.
That's your job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ahsoka's mysterious villains, they're not that mysterious. It's a failed Jedi and his apprentice.
Yeah. They're the not quite Siths.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe there was like a new villain I didn't know yet.
It's angry Volstagg.
It's the we're kind of nice guys, and not, so we're not full Sith yet, even though we have red lightsabers and
My
stuff.
Favorite line of Ray Stevenson so far has been the, you know, "It would be a pity to kill her. There's so few Jedi left."
Yeah.
Yes. Like,
aw. You know, for a ruthless son of a bitch. You get your heart in the right place, pal. You know, but you are in the dark side, so I know you'll get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Anyway, they're getting action figures.
Woo-hoo!
And they look really good.
Yeah, they do.
They actually look like both of them, and you can tell why. Mm-hmm. Because they're in the Black Series boxes, so they're the good ones. They're not those three and a three-quarter inch ones. So, yeah, it looks like you can buy them September 22nd. Oh, that was, we already had that day.
Mm. Well, good. On that Hasbro means they're Pulse. Available now.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it. I'm like, I have not had the availability to order these yet through Diamond. Thanks, Diamond.
Oh, Diamond.
Assholes. That's it. And of course, I'm shooting this to Braxton to have him double check.
You can probably find them wherever Hasbro action figures are commonly sold. I don't know where that is
like
anymore.
Like a Dr. Volz.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Except, you know, Diamond is my distributor, so sometimes I can't get shit.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what's next? What do we got? NSYNC confirms they were in Star Wars Attack of the Clones as Jedi. I found something to dislike more than Jar Jar Binks. Yeah.
Yep.
NSYNC broke the internet with a reunion and a confirmation that three of the members of the group were in Star Wars Episode II Attack of the Clones. They, I believe, revealed this information on Hot Ones. They're doing all the shit I want to do.
I know. I really want to do Hot Ones.
All I ever wanted was to be Captain Kirk's climbing partner on El Capitan. Did I get it? No. Why? Justin Timberlake somehow made it not happen. I don't know how, but I'll figure it out. I'll put it in a story. I'll show you Justin Timberlake and your insanely hot wife. Yeah. Yeah, that's where we're at. So that's it for the news.
All right.
All right, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're talking moving pictures.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner. I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
There's nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are now controlling the transmission. We control the horizontal and the vertical. We can deluge you with 1,000 channels or expand one single image to crystal clarity and beyond. Please stand by.
So have you guys been watching on the moving pictures this week that isn't Ahsoka? Joss?
Start with me. Nothing really. I mean, I think Jason at one point put on Bloodsport. Yeah, that was terrible. It was awful.
It's an awful movie.
Why are you...
checking to make sure you're okay, that's all.
Yeah, I don't.
That's the Jean-Claude Van Damme one?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's.
I'd give you a hug if I were there, buddy.
Yeah. And then we watched one of the, 15,000 Transformer movies. And it was fine, I guess, if you're into that kind of thing. I don't know. I didn't mind it. It wasn't great, but I didn't mind it. So, but yeah, didn't have time to really sit down with intention and watch anything. And I didn't get a chance to see Ahsoka. So, bummer for me. But what about you guys? What'd you guys watch?
Maybe you can wander off to pee while we talk about it.
Well, I could. I could simply take off my headphones and mute everybody for a minute.
And then we can wave when we're done.
Yeah.
Watched Lower Decks. Loved it. Was very happy with it. Upset there wasn't more. I know, my God. Want them to leak out one at a time. I want them all.
I was so happy that not only did we get to learn about the Orions, we got to learn about them in a hilarious way. That was my favorite part.
Yeah, it was.
Just all the little things, like their world is really nice, you know, for a pirate planet. They actually take really good care of their world and everything. It was just hilarious. And the addicted to the stank. I fucking loved that. That made me so happy.
Yeah. What else do we got here? What else did? The Continental.
Oh yeah, I've been thinking about that one.
They're dripping them out one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a whole season. So I just watched the first episode. I have no idea who anybody is. I watched the first three John Wick movies to get ready for the fourth John Wick movie, which I didn't have enough money to go and see, so I haven't seen it yet. But apparently these are the younger versions of a bunch of characters we know, plus a new dude played by Mel Gibson, of all people. And, you know, he's aging abnormally well, the fucker. not happy about that.
Yeah, fair. Mm-hmm.
You know, he deserves to age badly.
Yes, yes, he does.
So I watched that. I watched some more episodes. I'm trying to get caught up on the previous season of For All Mankind. I talked about this a couple of years ago when I watched it. It's on Apple TV. And it's basically, the premise is, what if the Russians got to the moon first? And then it becomes, what if the Russians got to the moon first? And what if the Russians were the first one to put a woman in space / the moon?
They were the first ones to put a woman in space, but yeah.
Yeah, this one's on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, that's the premise that it starts. It starts, you know, back in the 50s. We're in the 90s right now. On our way to Mars, it's all gone ape shit, and it's got a megalomaniacal billionaire and everything else. And
that sounds amazing.
It's a really wonderful show, and all the actors are good. The actor whose name I can never remember, who played Rick Flagg in those Suicide Squad-y movies.
Yep.
Yeah, he plays Ed in this. He's an astronaut, and he's fucking great. It really is. It's an incredibly good show. It's Ronald D. Moore is the one who did development on it. Mm-hmm. So it's got those good Battlestar Galactica genes in there. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Former Star Trek writer, Battlestar Galactica writer.
Yep.
Wrote for Outlander because he liked the series. Yeah, the book series, that is. Yeah, he's done it all.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
What else did I watch this week? The Continental, Star Trek, Ahsoka, watched some soccer. Yeah, that's where I'm at. How about you, sir?
Good enough. For me this week, well, we had Lower Decks, which, again, fucking wonderful and hilarious. I loved that episode. Watched Reservation Dogs. So, now I'm blanking on this actor's name. God damn it, I hate that. I was going to wax poetic about him, and now I fucking forgot his fucking name. I'm forgetting the fucking movie name, too. Goddamn fucking brain. Anyway, great episode of Reservation Dogs. We meet the main female character's dad, who is white, played by an actor who I wish I could fucking remember his name.
Was it Mel Gibson?
What's that?
Was it Mel Gibson?
No, it was not Mel Gibson.
Okay, that would have been startling.
He was the villain in Moon Knight. He was the main bad guy in Moon Knight, in the Moon Knight series.
Ethan Hawke,
thank you. Yeah. Now, there's a reason why I forget Ethan Hawke's name.
You don't like him.
I didn't like him for years. I did not like him. Any movie he was in, I was like, this would have been a much better movie without Ethan Hawke.
I know
in
why.
In the lead role.
I know why.
Yeah.
Because in Reality Bites, when he answered the phone, welcome to the winner of our discontent, you wanted to say that line.
I did want to say that line.
Stupid movie.
Also, I hate that movie. So,
oh, I love that stupid movie.
Oh, I hate that movie only because of the message at the end is bullshit. But the rest of it, Ethan Hawke, I just, you know, it drove me crazy for years. As he's gotten older, like when he showed up in Moon Knight, I was like, wait, this is where's this been? What did you have to get old to get some gravitas and some ability in your acting instead of just looking like a dumb fuck all the time? This is amazing. So he shows up as her dad in this episode, and her dad she's never met, had a kid way too young kind of thing, and then left her with her people on the reservation. Her mom died, and, he played it so beautifully awkward in this whole thing of, well, I want to have a relationship with you, but I know I'm the reason why you haven't had a relationship with me. And he, you know, she's like, she'd ask him a question. He'd start to give a reason again. He'd stop himself. He'd say, I could give you a reason, but in the end it was my fault. I could have not, that reason shouldn't have been what held me back. And he kept doing that over and over again to the point where I'm like, God, I want Ethan Hawke would be a great dad to have. Yeah, that's really cool. That was a really good, it was a really beautifully done episode. Real quiet, featuring just one character, although you see everybody for a minute. But it was just a great episode. If you aren't watching Reservoir Dogs, you should be watching Reservation Dogs, not Reservoir Dogs. If you aren't watching Reservation Dogs, you should. It's only 3 seasons. They're short seasons. They're on Hulu. Watch them before Hulu goes, oh, well, we don't want to pay for that anymore, and takes it off their network. So, yeah, watch it while you can. Watch Wrexham. Two-parter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. No, I watched Wrexham as well. It was only a half an hour.
2 half-hour pieces.
Oh, you got to it. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that makes sense, because it's been a couple of weeks since they dropped, so...
Right.
You would have 2 half hours.
So the first one, damn. So their main striker, Paul Mullins, because you get to learn about these players even deeper than you probably should. You find out Paul Mullins, they had a baby, and he hit 3 years old and started going backwards, and they realized he was autistic. And so he's going through that. Meanwhile, we meet a fan who is a teenager, and she has suffered autism her whole life. Or the, she wouldn't say suffered it. She considers her autism her superpower. And she's a super fan. And it's just this beautiful episode where the two of them connect. And it's just this really cool little, her and Mullins connect and everything. And it's just this cool little episode. I just loved it. And then the next one was just a lot of fun because it was, I'm like, the way these things go, because they were like, we got to face our rivals. And it's all this, you know, buildup of drama. I'm like, the way these things go, they're not going to win. So it was fun and then not so fun and then not so fun and then not so fun and then fun. So, yeah, good episodes of Wrexham this week. And then Fiona and Cake. This series is crazy shit, man. I love it. Again, if you've watched even a few seasons of Finn and Jake, the Adventure Time series, I should say, this one is almost like, it's like a what if, because they're going through a multiverse of different realities, different choices that could have been made. Like this last one, they go to a world where Simon didn't find Marceline, and so the vampires took over. And yeah, it's some dark stuff, and I'm loving it. It's still got some funny shit, but it's definitely, it's for, I wouldn't say it's for little kids. It's for an older crowd, you know, unlike Adventure Time. So worth watching. And then, of course, we had Ahsoka.
Oh, this is where I'm going to bow out for a few minutes.
There you go.
Okay, bye.
Good show.
Good episode. We finally get to the the other world. And apparently Claudia Black was there, and I didn't recognize her.
Yeah, I don't know if you did. We'll talk about that. Yeah. I recognized her voice,
mm-hmm.
and that made me go on the internet and find out who the fuck it was.
Yeah.
And I was pretty happy, because you know how I feel about Claudia Black.
But yeah, I like this, the idea of an origin world. It's very Battlestar Galactic-y, or even like Firefly, where there was an origin world, you know, and how all this, there's a reason why all the stories start a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
Is that they like to tell stories of their old, of what happened before they came to this new universe. So yeah. Cool stuff.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yep, liked it a lot. All right, let's...
I mean, that was, look, it opens up with them in the whale talking.
Yeah.
And it ends up with them being talked about being in the whale.
Yeah.
It was a nice round circle, and I was like, oh, I want more!
Good filmmaking, basically, to do that.
Yep.
Yeah, and just the quest that she went on to find Ezra. Really cool. You know, the wolf force.
Yeah.
was fun. And it felt, you know, it's like there are times when it's appropriate for Star Wars to feel like a Western. And we saw that a lot in Mandalorian. Here we get another moment of Star Wars feeling like a Western. I like that.
It was fun. I had a good time.
And I can't wait for the next episode, because this one kind of ended on a little bit of a cliffhanger. So let's see what happens next episode.
Yeah.
All right.
I got nothing else. Oh. I got anything else?
Right. Nothing else for me. Let's dive into some news.
News it is. Let's see what we've got today.
Try to get her attention.
Yeah, let's see. Hey, buddy. Hey. So let me finish off with telling you how Ahsoka ended.
Oh, gee, thanks. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I couldn't believe they killed that guy. That was nuts.
I bet.
Yeah. Let's see. It's time to do some news. What I really need to do is do some news.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. J.J. Abrams is reportedly rebooting a cult classic.
I see what you did there.
One of the worst movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give me shit. That was a fucking BG with a weird pocket knife.
I will be honest, I've never even heard of this movie before. So
the movie, for those of you that are wondering what the fuck I'm talking about, is Krull.
Yep.
Released in 1983 when I was 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I watched it on a sleepover on a VHS. And we were all so excited. And at the end of it, a bunch of 10 and 11-year-old guys are like, huh.
Yeah. Okay. What the fuck was that? Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I wanted a fucking wacky pocket knife.
You wanted a glaive, didn't you? Yeah. We all wanted a glaive.
Yeah, we tried.
And now you look at the glaive and you're like, what is the point of the glaive?
How do you catch that properly?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, how many times I took fucking pocket knives and stuck them to frisbees and shit trying to make mm-hmm. one?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. The movie was bad, but the props were top fucking shelf. No talking owls in this one.
The Aerobi took so long to come out. If it had been, if they had invented the Aerobi in 1983, we all would have been chucking glaives at each other.
Yep.
Because the Aerobi looked like a glaive because it had the three prongs and stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So, anyway, that's the rumor, is that Abrams is going to make Krull.
One thing Krull's most famous for, a certain actor with certain skills got his start there.
I'd forgotten about that.
That was his first movie. That was his first major movie, Liam Neeson.
Really?
First appeared in Krull as a captain of a guard or something, so he was a bad guy. Yeah. Yeah. It's a terrible movie otherwise.
So, for those of you that have... Oh, this is tough. Take your earphones off again.
Again?
Yeah, we're talking about Ahsoka for a minute.
I'll just mute you again.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
So, Claudia Black from Farscape and Stargate 1, SG-1, mm-hmm. and... oh, what's that show she just did? The Joss Whedon one.
Yeah, I want to say The Undergrounders, but that's not quite right.
No, it was the one with all the powerful women in Victorian London.
Yeah, yeah.
The something.
The somethings.
I let my brain forget it because it got canceled and I was really, really liking it. Anyway,
yeah,
Claudia Black.
The hell out of it.
Claudia, Pitch Black with the Val Kilmer. Or no, the...
Yep.
The Vin Rames. No, the Ving Diesel. Something. One of those bald guys. Anyway, she's playing Clothau, one of the three witches of Dathomir. Mm-hmm. So when we get to Dathomir, we meet her. And she is unrecognizable until you know it's her. For mm-hmm. me... I recognized her voice, but I didn't recognize where I recognized it from. So I went onto the internet and found this article saying that is my beloved Claudia Black.
The Nevers.
The Nevers. Thank you.
The Nevers was the series.
That was a good show. I liked it.
And that, it came on and it was so brilliantly done. And then Whedon got into all that trouble. And, it kind of sucked the air out of the room when it came to that. And the thing is that he left the series and his assistant producer took over and she was the one who'd written a lot of it anyway. He just got attached so that it could get made, really. And she took over and it should have been continued. Yeah. And didn't get continued.
Nope. So apparently hang on. Buddy...
Gotcha.
I'm going to die real quick. Hang on a sec.
Please don't do that. Jeez Louise.
Yeah. I'm choking on old coffee, so I'm drinking old coffee to make the coughing that the old coffee gave me stop.
I see.
I mean, it seems to have been successful, so go for it.
At least for the moment.
So, Russell Brand. Is there anybody on this podcast that did not just assume... that he was a skeezy fucking scumbag?
Oh, no. I always assumed that.
I assumed he was, and I had no evidence supporting that. So I'm like, I assume he's a skeezy scumbag, and he's probably going to turn out to be the nicest guy in the world. Nope. Turns out I'm wrong.
Four women, including one who is...
I was right, I guess. Yeah.
Four women, including one who was just 16 at the time, have alleged sexual assaults. Occurring between 2006 and 2013 when Brand was working for BBC Radio 2 and Channel 4, as well as starring in major Hollywood films. Back, remember when he was popular?
Yep.
He denies the allegations, which is step number one.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But he's also facing allegations of controlling, abusive, and predatory behavior following a joint investigation of the Sunday Times, the Times, and Channel 4 dispatches.
Oh. Mm.
They apparently have lots of testimony. Whereas I have what I like to call, I've seen him on TV. You know,
I've seen him in his natural state. I should say that. Yeah. Not playing a character, but just in his natural state. I'm like, oh man, this guy. Okay. Yeah.
Tavistock Wood Management, who apparently did not manage Brand's wood very well, has dropped him. So he no longer has entertainment management.
Mm-hmm.
After several accusations of sexual abuse revealed in a years-long joint investigation by a bunch of folks that really don't like Russell Brand.
Mm-hmm.
You got three competing newspapers to work together on this?
Yeah.
And they're like, fuck that guy.
We're taking him down.
And the other newspaper was like, no, I believe that's part of the problem.
Yeah. Okay. Please don't do that.
True.
Mm. Mm. Tiffany brought me water.
But there's...
Oh, that was nice of her.
But the damning thing is the next article. That's where I say, here's the evidence. Because this is the Bill Cosby evidence, in my opinion, right here.
Yeah, women's charity based in the UK has also announced that it's ended its relationship with the comedian and his organization. Mm-hmm. Let's see. As I've written about extensively in my books, I was very, very promiscuous. You know, just if they say yes, you're promiscuous. If they say no, mm-hmm. and you keep going, you're a scumbag. You deserve what's happening.
Mm-hmm. You're a rapist.
Yep.
Like, let's be clear. If she says no, you are now a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. While he was once viewed as quite progressive, sort of, mm-hmm. critics have accused Brand of shifting his stances to the right over the years. Right-wing conspiracy theorists, and we're going to end this article on this sentence. Alex mm-hmm. Jones has vouched for Russell Brand, saying they've become friends.
That answers everything you need to know right there.
Yeah.
Though the article from the Scotsman that I sent you, you may have skipped it. It says, basically, a stand-up comedian says, female comics set up a group to warn each other about Brand.
Well, yeah.
So this goes right back to Bill Cosby, where he was the worst-kept secret in comedy. And here is Russell Brand in British comedy, and he's the worst. His behavior is the worst-kept secret in British comedy. Yeah.
No, thanks for reading that. I can't get that fucking website to load properly sometimes. Mm-hmm. Amazon Prime Video will be adding ads.
What?
Yeah, and then if you don't want ads, you can pay...
You can pay more.
$3 more a month on top of your annual Prime fee.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for the love.
I don't know how this affects month-to-month fees, which is what I do, mm-hmm. so that I can turn it off when I can't afford it.
I would imagine it's the same. It's you'd probably get billed an extra $3 to turn off ads.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you go month to month, like I've done in the past, it's like, oh, well then my, what is it? $17 a month or something like that. Probably more.
Yeah.
It's going to go up to $20 a month. Yeah.
Doctor Who finally dropped the 60th anniversary trailer, for the 60th anniversary special. And it looks like whoever's in the hair and makeup department did David Tennant's Doctor Who hair based on a memory of a conversation with someone who probably hadn't seen the show. On the other hand, it looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could get my hair to do that still. I used to could. I cannot. I can no longer. It was a great trailer. Guess who the bad guy is? Guess who the bad guy is? Guess who
he
is? Guess who he is?
I already know. I already know. Are we going to say it out loud?
No, go ahead.
NPH.
NPH.
Neil Patrick Harris.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. He knows how you met your mother.
And do you know who he's playing?
I don't, actually.
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
He is playing the Toymaker, which is a villain from the old first series of Doctor Who with Bill Hartnell.
With Grandpa.
Yeah, with Grandpa Who. And he was this he had this thing he called the toy room. He was an extra dimensional being who had this toy room, and you had to work your if you had to play games in the toy room. So it was a little like that Korean series that came out a little while ago on Netflix where you had to play they played children's games but got killed if they failed.
Yeah.
Like they get shot right in front of everybody.
Squid Game.
Yeah, what's that?
Squid Game?
Squid Game. Yeah. So it was like Squid Game only done in the BBC back in the 60s. So it was tame. But basically the idea was that if you lost, you became his playthings for all eternity. If you won, the toy room would be destroyed and he'd have to rebuild it. So of course the Doctor and his companions go through this whole thing where they got to play all these childish games in the toy room. And then when they finish, they win, and they are freed. So they win the Squid Game, basically, yeah. But now, apparently, Neil Patrick Harris gets to come through as the toy maker, fully realized in this universe instead of being extra-dimensional. So that's kind of cool.
So Doctor Who returns in November with three!
Mm-hmm.
More than two! With three special episodes featuring David Tennant as now the 14th Doctor, all coinciding with the 60th anniversary. Cutie, Gatwa's first episode is the 15th Doctor, will air in that period.
Yep. Shit, it's over.
Yep. So, but yeah, so Neil Patrick Harris is playing the Toymaker. That's fantastic.
I gotta wonder about this because this trailer came out weeks ago, and it's like all of a sudden the U.S. press is like, oh hey, here it is, because I just got a text today from Bob going Alon Z, and he's sharing me the link to this trailer I've watched for weeks.
It was it was embargoed in the U.S.
Yep,
you weren't supposed to see it, but the internet is worldwide, folks.
Yep.
Sometimes.
It got put out on the BBC YouTubes, and I saw it. And every time these pop up, I'm like, ooh, a new trailer? Nope, same trailer. God damn it.
Goddamn dog's afraid to jump on the bed all of a sudden. Okay, that's it for the news.
All right, we're going to take another break, and when we come back, we're talking comics.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
So, some comic book news.
Comic book news it is. Marvel is officially announcing the end of the X-Men's Krakoa era.
Woohoo!
Hallelujah.
Yeah, another X title coming out January of 2024.
And I want to say, just like Ultimate Spider-Man, this Krakoa era went on way too fucking long.
Yep, everybody got a nice house, and apparently everybody just wanted to stay there.
Yep.
Marvel is also announcing a Planet of the Apes prequel series.
Mm.
Yeah, you can get your stinking paws on the Planets of the Apes prequel in January.
There you go.
It's going to be Mark Guggenheim and Alvaro Lopez. And they're the creative team going to beware the Planet of the Apes.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
I like it.
I don't. Have you read any of the other ones?
No.
Thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I read Planet of the Apes comics back in the 70s, but I've not read anything of the new stuff Marvel's done that's kind of bridge. What they're doing is trying to bridge the new movies with the classic movies.
Yeah.
And I like the idea behind it. I've looked at artwork and I'm like, I see where you're going. I like this idea, but I've never gotten into it to watch it like that. Yeah. Marvel, my monkey days are long past me, I guess.
Yeah. Mark Wahlberg kind of ruined monkeys for me. That mm-hmm. and how uncomfortable I was having feelings of a physical nature towards Helena Bonham Carter in that movie. Because
mm-hmm.
she was the hottest chimpanzee I've ever seen, and I will not walk back from that. I will own that statement. Helena Bonham Carter is hot, and you put her in monkey face, and I don't care. Because apparently I'm just as bad as Russell Brand.
Had that movie been good, I think it could have resurrected the franchise better than the more recent movies have.
I've seen the
more recent movies, and I've liked them, but I'm still tainted by how bad that Tim Burton movie was.
Sure. I think mine on the new ones is I watch them and I enjoy them and they're very good movies. And then mm-hmm. they go away. And at no point am I like, God, I can't wait for the next one.
Right.
And then the next one comes out. And I don't think I've seen the most recent one. And it's just because it's not triggering my yum.
Yeah.
But I will watch it at some point and I will go, oh, that was a good movie. And then I will completely fucking forget the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And that's Andy Serkis, for Christ's sake.
I saw the an old clip from Johnny Carson where Paul Williams, who was in one of the Planet of the Apes movies as an orangutan, came out in his full makeup and sang a song on Johnny Carson and then sat down and did an interview.
Why wouldn't you?
And it was just delightful. It was just so much fun because Paul Williams was such a hoot back in the 70s. And he'd come out, he says, we finished filming late and I just came in costume. And I'm like, you had to have brought the makeup team with you because they're going to be pissed that you're not on set. So.
It's either that or they just didn't want to take it off. And they're like, just go. Johnny will love it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very good deal. Paul Williams. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That dude was everywhere in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Cannonball Run.
Yep.
Smokey and the Bandit. Fucking Smokey the Bandit. I still love that idiot movie. I still love that stupid movie.
Such a stupid fucking movie, and I still love it. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, it's got a lot to do with Sally Field, but honestly, on that one, it was just a very charming Burt Reynolds in that movie,
mm-hmm.
and it cracked me up to the point where I started listening here a couple of years ago. I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put on some Jerry Reed at the store.
Yeah.
No. Jerry Reed has a song that is anti-trans from the 70s.
Yeah.
That is one fucked up, problematic ass song. And I'm like, I am never listening to anything but the theme to Smokey and the Bandit from him ever again. Because Eastbound and Down, much like Lethal Weapon 2, is a mm-hmm. goddamn masterpiece.
I still get a kick out of the fact that Smokey and the Bandit was about them having to bootleg Coors beer into the South because there was a ban in the South of getting Coors beer.
Yep.
I was like,
yep. Now the South
in the 70s. In the 70s, you would think all that was over and done with in the 30s and 40s, right? And they could not import Coors beer into the South. And I was like, what the fuck? And so the whole movie is that's the whole plot of the movie is they've got to pick up some Coors beer and basically smuggle it into the South.
And then the South saw you couldn't find any Bud Light. What the fuck,
man? Yeah, what the fuck?
Okay, so DC has something to say, and it goes mm-hmm. as follows. Quote, the Fables comic books and graphic novels published by DC and the storylines, characters, and elements therein are owned by DC and protected under copyright laws of the United States and throughout the world in accordance with applicable mm-hmm. law and are not in the public domain. DC reserves all rights and will take such actions as DC deems necessary or appropriate to protect its intellectual property rights, including, apparently, you know, letting Snyder make another movie. Who knows? They'll punish us.
They will. They will.
They will. Yeah. They'll make you watch that fucking Justice League cut in black and white. All of it. Take that. No. So, yeah,
you got to tell the story about the public domain that happened in your shop, though, because that was funny.
What?
Which one? What?
You told me this yesterday. A guy came into the shop.
Oh, yeah. So this dude comes into the shop and grabs a couple of Fables books and then lets me know they're free now because they're public domain. And I said, no, that's not how that works. That is a physical specimen of intellectual property in which you trade me currency for product.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to go write your own fucking fanfic about it and take your chances there, please, by all means, have a nice day. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't say any of that. What I said was, no, that's not how it works. That's not what public domain is. And he's like, oh, okay. All right. And then he left them on the counter and left. Free comics. Awesome. Bill Willingham also had a retort.
Mm-hmm.
Several questions have poured in over Fables rights. No, this doesn't include the right to reprint previous published Fables books and stories. If you come out with your own Fables books, others couldn't decide to reprint them. Create your own is the new order of things. No, I'm not in any way soured on Fables. I'll happily still sign Fables books and Fables at cons. But I'm just soured that a certain publisher joined the dark side. That's fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. So,
this whole Fables controversy is just killing me. We've turned it into Fables Watch at this point.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot more quotes in there. Go read it. They're boring. Yep. Brian Michael Bendis, pause for erection. Let me know when you're finished.
Okay.
There we go. Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Malev are reuniting for a new criminal comic called Masterpiece. Mm-hmm. There you go. So the Jinx World line of comics is now at Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
They're bringing over Bendis' old powers, as well as new books like Joy Operations and The Ones. Mm-hmm. And Dark Horse announced details for Masterpiece, a new Jinx World 6-issue miniseries. Didn't Jinx World go to DC for like 15 fucking minutes?
Yeah, when Bendis got brought on as kind of the head writer over at DC, he took Jinx World with him. And that's where he created Cover and Pearl, was while at DC.
Yeah.
But then he took all of that and went to Dark Horse. So he holds on to his intellectual properties and can reprint them at will, basically, through a different publisher if
he
wants to.
Pretty fucking smart.
Yep.
But anyway, the plot for this one made me go, wait, hang on a minute. So the plot is this girl who's really good at everything comes to find out her parents are both master criminals.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm like, wait, wasn't that the plot of Runaways at Marvel? Yeah. So you got a Mary Sue who finds out her parents are criminals. Yeah, I think Bendis has lost any originality at this point. So I may give it a shot. I may not. It just doesn't sound very original to me. So.
Yeah, no, I'll probably read it. Hmm. Anyway, that's it for the news.
All right. Well, what have you, speaking of reading, what have you guys been reading this week, Joss?
You guys are going to be so proud of me. I read some comic books. Five of them, in fact. Now, I know that you all wanted me to read more than just Daredevil, but I didn't. I only read Daredevil. But I was thankful I got that much time because it was a crazy week for me yet again, as it typically is. So, in lieu of watching Ahsoka last night, I read Daredevil. I read back and caught up. I reread Daredevil 12. I feel like this has been out long enough. I'm going to drop a few little spoilers. So if you have not read this Daredevil, the last few issues, and you don't want it spoiled, then, you know, mute me for a minute.
This is the Zdarsky run, right?
Yes, this is still Zdarsky. So Daredevil number 12. Matt and Elektra have this amazing fight. So Matt has come to the realization he has to go to hell and kill the Beast, right? Right. And how do you get to hell to kill the Beast? You have to kill yourself next to the portal so that it'll suck you to hell. But Elektra, Elektra does not want Matt to die. So instead they have a massive fight, like you do. Mm-hmm. Except their fights aren't just yelling at each other because they just, like, physically fight with each other. And Matt dies, you guys. Matt Murdock is dead. Chip Zdarsky's Matt Murdock is dead. Woo-hoo! And you turn the page, and there's a black page, and you're like, oh. And then you turn the page, and wait, there's more. He wakes up in hell with his dad. And gets a brand new white suit because he is the servant of God now. We're with me so far, everyone?
Yeah.
Sweet. Because then we get to issue 13. Again, we're still with Chip Zdarsky on this one. And we come to find out that the masters of the hand and the fist are like weird alien siblings or weird hell siblings or something. They are siblings and they're fighting with each other. And I honestly, this was one of the only times that Zdarsky, this whole entire 4 years that he's been writing Daredevil, I went, what? But okay. And then Matt Murdock got lightsabers. And once again, you guys, I went, huh? Because I just didn't, I don't know. It was fine. He saved the souls, including Foggy Nelson, but Matt did not escape from hell. So keep in mind, this is almost the last issue, and Matt is still dead. Our Matt Murdock is still dead and in hell. And then Daredevil 14. This is Zdarsky's last issue of Daredevil. And I open it up, and Matt is still dead.
holding to the tradition of fuck the next writer over. Yes,
we are holding to that tradition strongly. And we see Foggy meet up with Reed Richards, and he gives them the chessboard that he would play chess with Matt. Mm-hmm. And Elektra, we see that Daredevil is still strong in Hell's Kitchen through Elektra. But they keep getting glimpses of Matt. And, you know, Reed Richards is like, you know, it's just, you're just remembering him. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But then guess what, you guys? Matt's alive.
Of course he is.
But he doesn't know that he's Matt. And he's a priest. And he doesn't know Elektra. He's lost all memory.
Nice.
And I was like, huh? It ended. And I was like, wait. What did I miss here? And so I went back and I reread it. And there was no explanation. He just woke up as a priest with no memory. And that was the end of the Chip Zdarsky run of Daredevil. But wait, we've got one more because I did get to read it.
But he's a blind priest, right?
Yes.
He never gets his sight back because fuck you. Yeah.
Right, no, he's still blind. He's a blind priest. And so we open up Daredevil number one. By Saladin Ahmed. And, you know, on the first page of our Marvel comics, and it has, like, the little, like, previously, like, your recap. So I'm reading the recap, because I don't always read those line for line, because, like, like I've said, I go back and read the previous issue and then read my new issues. But it just literally, the opener just literally says, recently, Matt returned to life with no memory of his past adventures. So I guess we're not getting any kind of explanation, or maybe that's where he's going to like lead our story to.
Yeah.
Is how did Matt come back to life, you guys? So it also does allude. Oh, I didn't write it down. The opener. Did it allude to Guardian Devil? I can't remember now. However, it was a delight. It was, it's not Zdarsky anymore writing, but Matt's a priest. He's running a foster home that's kind of illegal from the sounds of it, because it's not under the church's authority and it's not under the foster care program's authority. Elektra's been funneling money to this foster home to keep it going. And then Matt starts to remember, and he gets into a fight with some guys that are trying to get one of the foster kids, and he breaks somebody's arm. And then you open, and the very last page, I don't want to spoil it for anybody. So if you want to ask me about it, reach out to me and message me, and I'll tell you what the last page did. Because I don't want to spoil it for people, but I do think this run's going to be exciting. Zdarsky did such a great job. Like I said, those last couple of issues, I either missed something as I was reading all of those, and when I go back and read it later, it's gonna hit me, or it just didn't quite make sense. But we're talking comic books, and they don't always make sense. So,
fair.
There's my Daredevil recap. I was so happy I got to sit down and read those finally, though, because it was good. It was worth it.
Awesome.
Yeah, what'd you get read, Jeff?
That's a great question. Wonder Woman number one, the new Tom King run. I started that one. Basically, MAGA hates the Amazons.
Yeah.
So they make them against the law.
Well, they would hate the Amazons, you know, because they're MAGA.
Yeah.
America is not great again if women are in charge. Yep. So, yeah.
So we start with a violent multiple murder in Montana.
Ooh.
By an Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get explained why she killed all those dudes, but one little drop of a line a few pages later mentions that she was in the area working with Native Americans.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I think you could put two and two together and figure out why she wiped out all those white dudes.
Yep.
So anyway, everything kind of goes nuts. And then at the end of the issue, Wonder Woman is in a fight with the government. And we find out it's not the government per se. It's not the United States per se. Everything's being masterminded by a bad guy.
Oh, of course. A bad guy.
Yeah.
So, named Donald Trump. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so big reveal on the end of issue one there. And then I read Predator versus Wolverine. And the premise on this one is basically in the early 1900s, a predator came to northern Yukon territory and had a run-in with Logan that did not end well for the predator. So the predator, who managed to survive, went home. And then he comes back 100 years later with friends. And that's where it ends. So that's what I, what did you get this week, buddy?
I'm just having a moment of going, the Logan in the early 1900s would have been very young.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a teenager.
As the fighter Wolverine. So yeah, the fact that it didn't go well for the Predator says a lot about how great he was, even when he was very young.
He does talk about being the best he is at what he does, even then.
Mm-hmm.
And he had help. I'm not going to tell you what the help was, because it's a really cool panel you're going to want to see when you flip that page. But
Help is the important part there. Then I'm buying it a little more if there's help, because yeah, he was kind of a pathetic guy for a while.
Afraid to shave.
This week, let's see, we had Green Lantern War Journal, by Philip Kennedy Johnson, and thank you for one thing, Phil, for holding on to the Emerald Knight storyline and not just suddenly retconning it back to where John Stewart has a ring. He now absorbs cosmic energy and projects it out in the green spectrum. He is basically a living power battery and ring himself. Cause he evolved. The what's interesting about this is it starts out with John back on Earth, living at his mom's house, trying to take care of her. She's wondering when his sister's going to come home, his sister who was killed when she was little. And meanwhile, John is he's trying to take care of her. You can tell she's got dementia or something like that, maybe Alzheimer's. And as John works, he's reliving, you know, in his mind, moments as a Green Lantern. So he's kind of got a level of PTSD, which I thought was interesting to show this old soldier, basically. Just, you know, he's back to care for his mom and he's going through PTSD. So then all of a sudden this new Green Lantern shows up, part of the new Green Lantern Order that's being run by the United Planets. and who had quarantined Earth, basically said, we don't want any, there will be no Green Lantern activity, and all Green Lanterns from Earth get to stay on Earth. And they've come to get his ring. So he showed up to get his ring because they're like, you aren't registered with us. You need to get, I want your ring. And he's like, I don't got a ring. And he's like, I read green energy all over here. You have a ring. And he says, so this house is forfeit. Everybody inside is going to be arrested. And John's like, you're not going to touch my mom. And the guy starts to talk back, you know, being a white cop, basically starts to talk back. And well, even though he's pink alien, John just cuts loose on him and kicks his ass into orbit. And it was just a beautiful moment. He's like, if you'd done any research, the Guardians know why I don't have a ring. If you'd done any research or even bothered to talk to him, you'd know I don't have one, but I'm still kicking your ass. And it was just, and he said, if you come after me and you threaten my mom ever again, then you're going to get a lot worse than this. He said, go back and tell him that. And that was the end of it. And I thought, wow, this is going to be a cool little series. You got a guy with severe PTSD who's just not taking shit off anyone. And I like that. Speaking of somebody who should have a lot of PTSD, but doesn't, Captain America, number one.
Oh, yeah.
By J. Michael Straczynski came out. And goddamn, this is a good book. Somebody was like, oh, I saw some review where the headline was like, Captain America number one was lackluster. I'm like, fuck you. You don't know what you're talking about. This was really good. For one thing, we get to dive more into Steve's past through his memories. Back when he was a 14-year-old kid and his mom passed away suddenly, and he was left with nothing, literally nothing, and had to live on the streets for 4 years until he turned 18 and was made into Captain America. And so we're going to get some of that flashback, which is Steve growing up in the 30s. Basically the late 30s as a 14-year-old fighting his way through it all and just trying to survive. It's really cool the way they're writing this. Meanwhile, he's trying to help out his own neighborhood and his house. He comes to find out that the guy's selling, the owner of the apartment building that his mom lived in and that he grew up in, that he now lives in again, is getting sold out from under him because the guy didn't want to pay for the upkeep, and everybody in the building was going to get evicted. So Steve's like, nope, that's not happening. So he calls his buddy Tony and asks for an advance on his Avengers salary. And Tony's like, so what are you going to do? You're going to get a jet? I always thought you should get a private jet. And he's like, no, I'm getting into real estate. Tony's like, excellent. And gives him the money to get into real estate. Basically, he's pulling a Hawkeye and buying the building he's going to live in.
Is this the one with the Spider-Man shows up and says you can't be good and a landlord, Steve?
No, not yet. Okay. Not this one. No, not yet. He's showing up next issue. Probably he'll say that. But the Fantastic Four come and they're like, hey, we need your help. And he gets pulled into this other dimension where he fights for weeks, but it's only a couple of days. It was fun. Just a fun issue overall. So you do get some action, which you got to have in a comic book, superhero comic book. And at the same time, you get a good story. And it was a good long read, which is something I like to say about comics sometimes, because they haven't been that for quite a while, because everybody seems to write toward the trade or the graphic novel, right? And so a page doesn't take you that long to read. These were good long reads of pages.
Nice.
Finally, also a good long read and a really fucking amazing book. I got picked up Zoe Thurgood's It's Lonely at the Center of the Earth, which addresses a period of her life. This is autobiographical. It addresses a period of her life where she had just put out her own book. She'd been identified as the future of comics because we talked about her a few weeks ago when she was down at San Diego picking up awards. She was doing art for another guy's book, and you find out that the art that she was doing for this other writer's book was basically what was keeping her alive. The fact that she could just kind of lose herself in that story, draw those images, draw those pages, kept her alive that whole time. She's got suicidal ideations throughout the book. She goes through a lot of crazy shit mentally. Her depression appears as a kaiju monster. It's just one big face mask, kind of scary face mask with horns. I don't know what kaiju monster that is. And then it's all black. So it's not quite the thing from Miyazaki's movies, uh-huh. but it's something. It's similar. My daughter could identify it in a half second if right. I showed it to her. She's also kind of haunted by like three or four different voices of herself, kind of an id, ego, and super ego. And the super ego is kind of like, or the ego is represented by a little girl. The super ego is represented by an angry younger version of only a couple of years younger version of herself. And then the id is a little girl. The ego is sort of this amorphous, thing. It has a face and a body, but it's all just kind of like a line art. And she often draws her face that way to say that the superego is in charge at this point. And the superego is just very matter of fact, just always saying this isn't going to work or that isn't going to work. And you see the battle. You'd see the battle between the id, the ego, and the superego going on around her, which is really kind of a cool metaphor. It switches from black and white to color. When the superego is in charge, her world is black and white. Whenever she's talking to her id, the little girl, everything explodes into color. And when the id is in charge, everything explodes into color. And it's such a cool little trope all the way through to follow this, going from black and white to color, black and white and color. There's a brilliant moment where she goes to America to meet up with a guy that she'd met online. And the line that comes out of that whole meeting is, I went all the way to the United States and all I got was this lousy STD. So, yeah, wonderful little book. If you've had depression, if you know of someone with depression, I think this... She hates, you can tell, she actually talks about it in the book. She hates the word relatable when it comes to her, her biographical work. But the fact is that I think you would find it very relatable because she's showing you her innermost turmoil and laying it out on the page. And it's just fantastic, including the fact where the id comes up with this great idea. And she's like, nope, everything's changing. And the book literally starts over again.
Really?
And it's so much, it's like they actually go through the title sequence and stuff, and then it goes back to, and then it's just, okay, we're not really starting over. We're starting here, from here. But this is, the idea is this is a fresh start for me. And that's when she goes to America, only to get her heart broken and get a lousy STD out of it. But yeah, it's a really cool book. And I encourage you to find it, read it, and get it out there.
Where might one find a copy of that book?
I would say, hopefully, Dr. Volz, although I took the last copy from your one section, your banned book section. So
then I need more.
You need more. So you can get them from Dr. Volz. Just let Jeff order some more, because I know I grabbed the last copy from his banned book section. I don't know if he has any more over on the shelves.
If I don't, I got more coming.
Yep. It's a full graphic novel from Image Comics. Because it's from Image Comics, $12.99 for this nice, thick graphic novel. I mean, that's a decent-sized graphic novel. But Image Comics doesn't charge you a lot for their graphic novels, unlike other publishers who want to charge $25 for a trade.
So tell everybody the name of it one more time.
What's that?
Tell everybody the name of the book one more time.
It's Lonely at the Center of the Earth. Center spelled the British way with an R-E instead of E-R. It's Lonely at the Century of the Earth, an autobiographical novel by Zoe Thorogood, whom I've been following on Twitter or on Instagram, and she is an absolutely lovely human being. At least, her Instagram persona is an absolutely lovely human being. I know everybody's Instagram persona is an absolutely lovely human being most of the time.
Mine's not.
Yours not. Yours is an angry, angry human being.
It's very political and angry all the time.
All the time.
Well worth picking up and reading, I'd say. If you've ever suffered through depression, if you've ever had moments of uncertainty, you see the imposter syndrome pop up here and there. All that stuff is put on display, and I fucking love it. I fucking love to see this kind of stuff. This is what comics can be, and this is one of those you can say, well, it's a comic book. Oh, well, no superheroes, no capes and tights. Just a girl in her underwear half the time, you know, trying to get through the day. Because why should she's an artist? Why should she put on pants? You know, yeah. brilliant little piece. But today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow is Wednesday. It's time for our picks of the week.
You only say hello so you can say goodbye. These two words must make your life complete. You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
So what are you looking forward to this week, Jess? And in November.
So I'm going to start with indies this week. So from Image Comics, it is a compendium. It is Ghosted. It's the 10th anniversary of Joshua Williamson's breakout hit horror series. I did not read this 10 years ago when it came out, and so I'm excited. It sounds really interesting. Jackson Winters is one of the greatest criminal masterminds to ever live, except he's rotting in jail. I know, I agree with the pupper. After his last doomed score. But when a filthy rich collector breaks Winters out, he's tasked with putting together an elite team of paranormal experts to do the impossible. Steal a ghost from a haunted house of horrors. Ooh. It's equal parts Ocean's 11 and The Shining. I don't understand how that's going to work out, but it sounds intriguing. And it's getting to be spooky season, so I look for spooky season books for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming out in November, I am going with Boom Studios' Zawa and the Belly of the Beast from Michael Dalinas. I hope I said that right, both as the writer and the artist. Really, it opened with the opening line of the solicitation I read. It says, Twig meets Marceline the Scream Queen. And I loved Twig. I loved it. I thought it was delightful. Mm-hmm. So Zawa is trapped inside her mountain by pollution-spewing factories. The guardian spirit Zawa only has industrial waste to eat, leading her to a bitter existence of paranoia and destruction. But when two siblings from a nearby village help her escape, they'll quickly learn that the way to calming Zawa's heart is through a well-nourished stomach. So I don't know what Zawa's gonna eat, but I bet I'll find out in November.
That's right.
How about you, Jeff? What's your indie pick of the week?
Indie pick of the week. I've got two for the week. From Boom, I've got Mosley. I don't know if you guys remember this one or not. It was pretty intense. It's coming out in a trade paperback. And I just fucking love to read you the description, but I'm waiting for the fucking website to load for 45 fucking seconds.
I love it.
Yeah, that's great. All right, and then Cinebook. Oh, here we go. Mosley. In the hyper-technological world of the late 21st century, Mosley is a bitter old janitor on a mission from a higher power to unleash holy hell upon the too big to fail tech gods. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, reading that. And then from Cinebook, I'm grabbing Highlands Volume 1. In a Scotland racked by three throes of the Jacobite Rebellion, a tragic tale of ambition, politics, betrayals, and love unfolds in Scotland, 1743.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's all about the Duke of Claxton looking for a new painter.
Anyway. And the Highland antics that will come from such thing. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It looks silly, and I like that, and so I'm going to go for it. And then in the future, future, future,
mm-hmm.
future. I am picking up The Last Ronin, The Lost Years, Director's Cut.
Mm.
Yeah. So that ought to be pretty cool. Where to go, where to go, where to go, where to go? I do hate this. Yeah, it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin, Lost Years, on sale at the beginning of November. This is the story of our last surviving Ninja Turtle and what he did in between everybody dying and the beginning of The Last Ronin. So this is his wandering, good deeds, Kwai Cheng Kang story. So what about you, sir?
Let's see, indie picks for me this week from IDW. I'm also looking. I want to pick up the Highlands Volume 1 from Cinebook. So hopefully you get in two of those next week. But the Star Trek Day of Blood, Shax's Best Day will be coming out from IDW. So here's how it worked out. Shax is the Bajoran security officer in Lower Decks. So he's always played for comedy. His thing is he always wants to blow up the warp core. And they did a whole thing in the season finale of last season where he gets to finally blow up the warp core. And it's his proudest day ever. Well, this is Shax's best day. He got drafted to help out when Worf left the USS Theseus in the Star Trek comic book, who was the security officer for Benjamin Sisko. He gets drafted in to be Benjamin Sisko's new security officer. And when he... anyway, they wind up on Kronos. They're fighting Kalos the Unforgiving or the Unforgettable, and there's this big, huge battle that goes on. In the meanwhile, Shax disappears for a while and then comes back, and he is hyped up, like riding on the top of the Defiant, and they're like, "Will you get inside? We're about to go into orbit," kind of thing. And you're like, "What the hell has Shax been up to?" Well, this issue is going to tell us. This is a $5.99 double sized issue, one shot, written by the writer for Lower Decks, the Lower Decks comic book series, Ryan North, and the artist from The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, and they're basically giving us a 30-page standalone tie-in to Star Trek Day of Blood and the Bajoran, you know, with Shax going into Bajoran beast mode. I'm so excited for this one. For the future, and I will state, this is it, guys. All the things we've talked about for November, you better get them ordered this week. The FOC, the final cutoff, final order cutoff is I think the end of this next week, or the end of this week. So if you want to get
basically
these
Sunday,
if you want to get these November titles we're talking about, you better get these orders into your local comic book dealers, like Dr. Volts, like the Nerd Store. Get them in. So here's an indie pick for you from Titan Comics called Forgotten Runes: Wizard's Cult. This is a new 10-issue series from Titan Comics. Begins a seemingly unconnected series of magical tales about powerful wizards, but gradually merges into a legendary saga. And it looks like the first one has a pirate wizard, which just makes me happy. So I can't wait to read about the pirate wizard. And that's coming out in November. From DC Comics, speaking of beast mode, we get Beast World. They're about to start another crossover at DC because they haven't abused it the way that Marvel did in any way, shape, or form. No, not at all. But this is the new, here's how everything's going to end, and nobody can solve this except for Beast Boy. So this is Beast World, written by Tom Taylor. So I'm already giving it a pass. This could work. But yeah, an unprecedented event to DC Universe. Superman, Wonder Woman, Starfire, all powerless to stop the Necrostar from ending all life on Earth. The only hero who can save the world, Beast Boy. And this is going to be a big crossover event. I don't know if it'll go more than a month in crossovers, maybe 2 months. But there's all kinds of little Beast World things. There's a Beast World tour, Beast World Waller Rising, which should terrify everybody. Beast World Evolution, written by Marv Wolfman. and art by George Perez. So basically, it's going to go back and talk about Gar. It's going to basically go over Gar's life, starting with the Marv Wolfman stuff that they did, but also covering a few other moments. And yeah, that's it's all. I think it's going to go for a couple months and be done. But yeah, Titans Beast World. Looking forward to that. So again, get those orders in for those. Next week, though, from the mainstreams, we get Invincible Iron Man number 10, the marriage of Tony Stark, the wedding of Tony Stark, and Emma Frost. You know, they're basically come join the lucky couple as they exchange vows, attire as Hellfire formal, orchestrate to follow. Plus some exclusive wedding extras, all by Jerry Duggan. I'm delighted by this. This is going to be fun. So here we go. Iron Man getting married. And this is more of a marriage of we're merging our fortunes kind of thing. Right. Than they're actually in love. And from DC Comics, Green Arrow number 4, The Return of Parallax. And we found out, looking at solicitations... for December, Green Arrow looks like it's going to continue. So well done, everyone, for getting your orders in for Green Arrow, making sure you got it, got number one ordered, because they've gone ahead and greenlit to keep going with the series rather than making it a 6-issue mini. Doesn't mean it couldn't get canceled if you don't keep ordering, so keep ordering. Joshua Williamson's work on this has been spectacular. So we get the return of Parallax. Because for those who don't know Green Arrow's weird history, at one point, Oliver Queen was killed. And who brought him back? Parallax. And everybody thought, oh, Hal Jordan brought him back. No, Parallax brought him back. Hal Jordan wasn't in charge at that point. It's a little like the Phoenix. Parallax was an entity that basically had Hal Jordan's body, but Hal Jordan was not involved in that in any way. So, yeah, it's going to be cool. So what is your mainstream pick, Jeff?
Going for Immortal Thor number 2. Mm-hmm. Just because. Been good so far.
Might as well.
Yeah. And then Power Girl number 1. I like the new outfit. I think we could have covered up the boob window, but, you know, that's how we know it's Power Girl, I guess. I don't know.
Yep. That's her superhero symbol. You know, Superman's got the big S on his chest. Wonder Woman's got the eagle or the WW. Batman's got the bat. Power Girl shows her cleavage, I guess.
Yeah, but for what it's worth, this one's being written by Leah Williams, who I adore and think is extra super. We really ought to tag her on this episode. She's great, man. She's a wonderful writer. She did, was it X Factor there for a little while? Mm-hmm. And those were good. They were X books I could read and I enjoyed them. And then where's it at? I hate this website. It's good until now. Ultimate Marvel, the Hickman omnibus.
Ooh.
This has Ultimate Thor 1-4, Ultimate Comics Hawkeye 1-4, Ultimate Comics Ultimate 1-12. It's stuff from Ultimate Fallout.
Mm.
560 pages. It retails for $100. But if you come into Dr. Volts and want to buy one, I'll get you one. And instead of that $100, it's $100 and I give you a hug.
There you go.
Worth it.
Yeah.
100% worth it, man.
You still got to pay for it. I mean, it's not Fables, for Christ's sake.
Mm-hmm. It's not public. Yeah, it's what not about, in the public domain.
What about you, Joss?
So this week, from Marvel Comics, again, a trade paperback. I didn't find a lot of singles this week that I wanted. But from our favorite Kelly Sue DeConnick is Captain Marvel, the Saga of Carol Danvers. This collects Kelly Sue's run from 2012, numbers 1-8, and The Life of Captain Marvel, number 1-5. So a good just a good look back at Captain Marvel, and I remember reading Captain Marvel in 2012 with Kelly Sue as the writer, and I loved it, and it was one of the things that made me love the character. So there you have that. And then in the future, I gotta click the right button. There we go. In the future. From Marvel Comics as well. Short series, one of four, is Spider-Gwen Smash from Melissa Flores. And, that artist, Enid Balam. I hope that was right. The Mary Janes are off on a four-city tour as the opening act to one of Earth 65's biggest rock bands. Gwen has promised the band that this big break will be all about the music. No web swinging, slinging, just drums. But you can't ever say that, right? Like that. Mm-hmm. Right there, Gwen. But when a mysterious assassin targets the headliner, Gwen begins to wonder how she got this gig in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. I'm not a huge... I recognize I have three Spider-Man titles in my hold right now. But historically, I haven't been a huge Spider-Man reader, but I love Spider-Gwen, and little short series are my jam, because I don't feel like I get so far behind in them, so I'm going to look for it. I'm going to get it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, you did yours. Have you done yours?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so... reminder again, final order cutoff for November is this week, so get your orders in. Starting next week, we'll be talking about the December solicitations, which are available at comicreleases.com if you're curious to find out what we could or could not be promoting. But go check it out. Comicreleases.com has everything from Boom Studios, Dark Horse, DC, IDW, Image, and Marvel, of course. And probably will get Titan Comics as well. So all of these are put in this. These are the guys who put out big solicitations every few months. And anything else, kids?
Nope.
All right. Well, I'll remind everyone to join our Patreon squad, patreon.com/dfnmedia. This week, we're continuing the 57 best Star Trek episodes list to see if we agree or disagree with it. This is from Variety, and we're starting at number 30 in the list this week. We'll go as far as we can handle it, and then we'll move on from there. And so I will say, as I always do, until the Fantastic Four needs Cap's help, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
For Asgard.